Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, May the 22nd, and welcome to our commentary. The Mexico elections are actually getting closer and closer. We're trying to do a couple of videos between now and the next 10 days to talk about that election and what we believe will happen. There are obviously different opinions going around. There was a very interesting article that came out in Pan American Post or Pan Am Post, a very good website that deals with issues of Latin America. And in this particular issue today, the columnist was writing that he thinks this is going to be a very personal election, or a very close election, I should say. Well, personal in the sense that it touches a lot of Mexicans. That's what I meant to say. But a very close election, because many people feel that the future of Mexico is at stake. And then there's a very interesting opinion over at the Wall Street Journal talking about the elections, where they say that the real question is Mexico about to become a one-party state, meaning where you have a majority party that basically runs everything? Now, that's the way it was for a long time. I mean, if you're familiar with Mexican history, for much of the 20th century, that's the way Mexico was run. Basically, there was one party. It was called the official party. It was the PRI, P-R-I, and they ran the country. They basically ran the politics of the country, and that was it. There was some token opposition in the north, and every once in a while, they put up a candidate. But, you know, the PRI, because of their relationship with big labor and big business, basically ran the country. And some would argue at some times it ran the country well, and other times it did not run the country well. But anyway, so that ended in 2000 with the election of Vicente Fox. And then for the next few elections, it was very competitive. What's going to happen this year? I don't know. I don't know. But some polls are showing that this lady, Claudia Sheinbaum, is going to win, and she is basically running on López Obrador ticket, or his party, that is, a party called Morena. And there's also an opposition candidate who is running a very good campaign, but does not appear to be able to close the difference in the polls. I don't know what's going to happen. I have to tell you that I have lots of friends in Mexico, and some friends are saying that it's over. Other friends are saying that there's going to be a surprise. I don't know what's going to happen, but we're going to keep an eye on it, because the election in Mexico is very important for the United States. And having a stable Mexico is very important. And when you see the levels of violence in Mexico, you have to wonder, you know, is Mexico going to be a stable country? And I know some people think that Mexico is a failed state because of the influence, if you will, of criminal elements. I don't think they're there yet, but it could easily derail into that kind of a situation if they don't have a strong leader who follows López Obrador, who is very popular, with no question about that, at least if you believe the polls. He's very popular, but I don't necessarily think he's done a good job in making Mexico a better country. So we will see. We will see in about 10 or 15 days who is going to win the election in Mexico, and then tell you what we think and how that new president is going to work with whoever we elect, who I believe will be President Trump in 2024. So we'll keep an eye on the Mexico elections. As I said, I want to do at least a couple of programs about the election before it happens on the 2nd of June, which is, of course, a Sunday. I have a post over at the American Thinker today getting a lot of exposure, and it's about Senator Rubio on Meet the Press. I thought he was fabulous on Meet the Press. Well-spoken, very telegenic guy, kind of guy. And I think he demonstrated to Republicans, if you want to see how you answer questions from the media and how you tackle the media, you watch that video, because I thought Senator Rubio gave a class on how to do this, whether they're talking about the election and all the questions about election integrity, or whether they're talking about abortion. I thought he did a wonderful job in talking about this. And as I say, many Democrats or many Republicans should watch that interview and see how you deal with the topic. There's something going around, and I have not confirmed it altogether. I've read about it. I'm waiting for a little bit more information. But, you know, that FBI raid on President Trump's home back in August of 2022, there is some information out there that this was authorized by President Biden, and that the FBI went in there with weapons that were probably a little bit too much for something like this to be approved. As I say, it's kind of up in the air. I'm hearing different things, but this is going to be a major story if this is true. I mean, because if you remember, it was the Attorney General who said he made the decision, but now it appears that it was President Biden who made the decision. And that creates a few problems to have the President of the United States actually approve an FBI raid on the leading candidate of the other party. I mean, that's you're crossing some very dangerous lines when you get into that kind of territory. So we're going to follow that story a lot as it develops over the next couple of days. We understand that President Biden is going to release more oil from the oil reserves. Look, the reason we have these oil reserves is for emergencies. They're not because I need to bring down the price of gasoline before Election Day. That's not the reason that we have these reserves. We have these reserves because there are times, emergency situations, where you need, whether it's a war or whether it's a natural disaster or whatever it may be, that's why you have these reserves. And he keeps using them for political reasons. I mean, that is just totally irresponsible. There are better ways, by the way, bringing down the price of gasoline than using our oil reserves. You know, unleashing our energy potential might be a much wiser way, and certainly a lot more productive for the American economy. Lots of polls are going around, you know, and they look good for Donald Trump. There's no question about it. The polling data looks better and better for Donald Trump. You know, you cannot deny that. At the same time, it is late May, and there's still a lot of time left. There's at least 5 full months plus a week or so in November. So there is a lot of time. The only thing that I will tell you is, and I went back and checked this out. If you go back over the years, and I'm going to go back, let's say, to 1964, let's say the last 60 years, when we started using a lot of this polling data. We used it before, but it was more 64 when television and more of the media came into the coverage of these elections. But since 1964, the candidate who was leading at this time, meaning late May, first week of June, let's say Memorial Day, the candidate who was leading at this time went on to win the presidency every time, except 1980, when Jimmy Carter lost to then candidate Ronald Reagan, and in 2016, when Hillary Clinton lost to Donald Trump. But most of the time, if you have a president, particularly an incumbent, who is leading at this time of the year, the incumbent usually goes on to win. So when people say that these polls are early, they are early. But historically, they've been significant at this stage of the game. Usually when somebody is leading, particularly, you can also look at it the other way, when a elected president or incumbent president is behind at this stage of the game, he normally loses. For example, the first President Bush was behind at this point in 1992. So that's an example right there. Clearly, Jimmy Carter, now he was ahead, but he was the last incumbent, one of the incumbents who lost. So normally, if a candidate is ahead, and especially outside of the margin of error, at this time, they go on to win. That doesn't mean that's going to happen with Donald Trump. Understand that. But it just, you know, a further indication that Donald Trump is building up a very significant and consistent tendency of being up in these polls. And I think that has to mean something. That has to mean something when you are when you're analyzing the election. I guess we have more student bailout. You know, the president is signing more student bailout. I don't know how he does this. I mean, he doesn't have the authority to do it. So these are the same people who tell you that Donald Trump's going to be a dictator. And then on the other hand, they're sitting there canceling student debt like, you know, the American people have deep pockets that they could just, you know, turn over to the government so that they can bail out student debts. This is irresponsible, utterly irresponsible. But just like the oil reserves that he's releasing, this is what you call pandering. He's desperate for votes. He is desperate for votes, but it's not working. It's not working. A new poll came out today and his approval rating is down to 38%, 38 or 36%. You know, when you're under 40 and you're the incumbent, you got some real problems. You got some real problems. And I think this man has some very serious problems. Well, on this day in history, 1859, so that's a long time ago, a fellow by the name of Arthur Conan Doyle was born. Now, he went on to write the Sherlock Holmes novels that became so popular in the second half of the 19th century. In fact, I still think to this day, it's the most popular detective series ever put together. And I think all of us at one time or another have had our Sherlock Holmes obsession where we read a bunch of his novels. I have had moments like that. I remember one time buying all of them and reading them. I was taking a bus at one time and I was commuting every day. So I had one of his books and I went through just about all his books, I think in a month or two. They're easy to read and they're very good. They're very intense, his Sherlock Holmes novels. So Dr. Doyle, he was a real doctor. He was a real doctor. And he apparently inspired, of course, Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. And if you read the doctor or the Sherlock Holmes novels, you know that Dr. Watson knows a lot about medicine. Well, the reason he does is because the author, Dr. Doyle, was a doctor who got frustrated with medicine and decided he wanted to do something exciting. So he wrote a bunch of detective novels to occupy himself when he was bored being a doctor. Look, I think he made a good decision. I think he made a good decision to write all those novels. I have no idea if he continued his medical practice. That part I don't know. I'll have to read about that. But clearly, he wrote a lot of books that for generations have been top of the list, some of the best novels that have ever been written. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. And if you're in the Dallas area, you're going to get a lot of rain this afternoon. So I hope you cover yourself. Bye-bye, everybody.